Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Let's hear it for. Hear it for the boyoys.
What?
I'm Alex.
I'm sorry, Alex. I missed my spot to come in. We rehearsed this so many times. When was I supposed to come in and harmonize with you?
No, never. No, don't do that.
Well, Let's hear it.
Stop. For the boys.
This is awful.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this is the final episode of season one of The Boys. You found me. We're going to be talking about it. Now, if you haven't watched the episode, a regular reminder from the beginning here, watch the episode first because we're going to spoil it. We're going to talk all about it, about the season one finale as we get psyched for the season two premiere that is coming very soon of The Boys. Now, Justin, you weren't here for the last episode. We did talk about this. You worked on The Boys after show that is premiering on August 28th, right?
Yes, coming up at the end of the month. It's called Inside the Boys. And
gross.
Yep, which I think is a great title. It really captures the show with just a little bit of like, whoa, that's more extreme than I thought it would be. but it's a really fun after show. We get into a lot of the issues, both on the sort of funny comedic side, a ton of the actors show up and special guests, as well as like some of the underlying social issues that the show confronts head on this season as well as the second season.
That's awesome. Yeah. So not to be your schedule provider or anything, but it premieres on August 28th with a recap of season one, right? Yeah. And then September 4th. Three episodes are going to drop along with the first three episodes of the show. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Wow, that's well planned.
That's awesome. I hope if you want to send them any of our podcasts so they can get a little lesson in how to talk about the show, you're welcome to do that.
Yeah, I guess this is the real after show here. this is the after show.
Yeah, the after after.
This is the after party where people are like, where is everybody?
Yeah, exactly. It's so exclusive. We're the only three here, as usual.
All right, so let's give a brief recap of what happens in the final episode of season one, and then we can get into some specific moments. Well, I think it's actually relatively straightforward because the main things that are happening here are everything gets blown up in terms of the boys themselves. They try to scramble, basically, to take down Voight, to take down Homelander. They mess it up completely as Butcher kind of goes rogue a little bit. Yeah. Huey heads off to rescue everybody else and is actually pretty successful at it in a surprising way. Though they get caught at the end by the bad guys,
Real quick, I want to ask you guys, if you were going to get shot by somebody, would you feel better knowing they were yelling, "I'm sorry," as they were shooting you? Or you think it would make it worse?
Yeah, definitely. I love an apology, especially a pre-apology.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. Like a kind mugger. That's nice. I'd feel much better about that if they were just very gentle about it.
I'm so sorry, but I'm going to need all of your money.
That is a great moment, though, with Huey. But then they do get caught. They get rescued by Starlight, who ultimately teams up with them to save them at the end of the day.
Because she's a fucking superhero.
Yeah. She is, in fact, and that leads to a confrontation with A-Train, bringing the season full circle. He has a heart attack in the middle, but she saves him, lets Huey go, and that's one of the cliffhangers we end on. The other big one that we should probably mention before we get into specific moments and some of the bigger arcs is that Homelander finds out that not only did his baby not die, but Becca, Butcher's wife, is very much alive, and the big cliffhanger at the end of the episode is he brings Butcher back after killing Stillwell, after her house gets blown up, maybe with her baby in it, which is pretty messed up. He brings him to Becca's house, dumps him on the lawn, is like, surprise, your wife's alive. I am the son. I am the father of her son. Deal with that, asshole. And that's how we wrap up the season. So lots of big stuff there. Not sure where we should start necessarily. Do we want to start with the end? Do we want to talk about the whole Butcher Homelander stuff that goes on?
Well, yeah, I think that's good.
Okay. I wanted to build up to that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Huey Starlight relationship.
Of course you did, you old romantic,
comedy, soft heart.
I'm turning into Justin. I like to talk about the relationships.
It's very strange, the arc of our podcasting. I started as a relationship-focused man, and you've become that. You've really learned a lot from your big brother, Justin.
I haven't changed one bit. Yes. So let's stick with what we were sticking with and talk about the end first. Then we'll go back and talk about Huey and Annie, because there's lots to talk about there. But what do you feel about this arc? We've certainly talked over the course of the episodes. They teased and talked about what happened with Becca and Homelander back in the day, why she left. We finally find out there. In total, what is your take on this storyline? How'd you feel about how it wrapped up?
Well, I really, really loved how it felt like a comic book ending of this show. Like, it had that last page, oh shit moment. Like, I was really impressed by how well this show kind of landed that ending and that kind of like reveal of like, it's such a cool moment. Like, fuck it, I'm blowing us all up. And then all of a sudden, wake up on a lawn and there's the woman who I've been in love with and thought was dead. Turns out she's alive and having the most evil person's baby, and their eyes both glow. I mean, that was just crazy, insane. Even watching it the second time, it's still like, holy shit.
I think the genius of this show is that they have, in Butcher and Homelander, these two characters who are like, you know, archenemies, and they're just wrapped around the axle of each other. They just can't not be there. And it's great. The way that Butcher has spent all season up, it's all about Becca and getting revenge, and to then give her back to him, but with the caveat that she's under Homelander's control and is super connected to him at the end of the season, is great. And the fact that throughout this episode, building up to the confrontation at Stillwell's, like, Butcher has a way of getting to Homelander that no other character does.
Yeah, and how about the fact that, like, Homelander is then impressed by how dark and fucked up Butcher is? Like, that whole kind of, like, villain monologue why Stillwell's there with the C4 on is so creepy.
Well, the whole thing, to the point you guys are making, works so well because there's no way that Butcher and Homelander should be an even match. Butcher has no powers. Homelander could destroy him in a second. There's no reason for Homelander to leave him alive. But it's a well-structured episode and it's well-written because it does bring them to this point where Butcher doesn't exactly have the upper hand. And as it turns out, he does not have the upper hand at all. But because of his nihilism, because he is at such a low point, that actually makes him dangerous to Homelander in a specific way.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we do get that moment where he thinks the leverage over him is that he has Stillwell and he's threatening Stillwell, which up until this point, Homelander has had a relationship with Stillwell and has cared too much about Stillwell. But he's just learned this information that Stillwell's been lying to him the entire time. That pushes him up to the edge, and we get that horrifying moment where Homelander laser eyes, heat visions her through the head.
Like, just the, oh, the graphics of that was so scary, man. That was crazy. Yeah.
And then we do get that moment, which is wild, where you know the baby is in the house, but Butcher blows it up anyway. I know there's not time to talk about that necessarily at the end of the episode, but it's crazy
that baby's
maybe
dead.
A baby he, died.
He hated that baby. There's no way he's saving that baby.
Hmm. Well, but also Butcher is ostensibly the hero of this show, or one of two heroes, and he straight up just murders a baby. Like, that's intense. That's an intense choice. But I also want to say, like, the way that Homelander, like, he is mad at Stillwell for lying to him, But I think it's more he's like, I have a chance here to destroy what everyone thinks is my one weakness. I'm going to do that and become even more powerful. That feels like a strong motivation for him there, too.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, there's certainly been storylines where Superman tries to get rid of all the kryptonite. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Homelander going forward, given that his kryptonite is gone. What is the thing that can take him down or hold him back, if anything? And I guess we'll have to find out.
And also, just one more thing on that. It is interesting that he has the... He goes from being wanting to be mothered so hard by Stilwell this season to the point of like being jealous of her actual baby, being into breast milk like more than normal. and then he finds out that he has a son. So I think he, like a child, is like, oh, I don't need my mom anymore. I have my own family in the Becca and Becca's son reveal.
Well, and they've done a nice job of weaving that through his character arc over the course of the season, that he is the Soup who was raised by nobody. He was raised by scientists in a blank room. So even though they haven't explicitly stated this at any point, it's clear that he needs that family unit. So that's something that potentially we'll see, I guess, going forward.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump back and talk about Annie and Huey. Pete, take it away.
All right, so we, you know, last we left them, you know, Huey's trying to reach out and be like, yo, I'm so sorry, whatever. And he kind of chose Butcher over her in the park, which was a little upsetting. So when we have Annie show up to rescue him, like, that was such an amazing crazy moment, and like the look on Huey's face to realize I'm being rescued, you know, it was really cool and very powerful. And her line of like, yeah, as you said, I'm a fucking superhero, was so badass. That was a really great moment.
Yeah, I agree. Like another example of the way they've just in this show, they pit these characters who I think are in love with each other, but they pit them against each other in such a smart way. Like, Huey lied to her a lot, and she was just thought this was the one pure thing in her life, the relationship. But what happened was that... not right now. I'll be with you in one moment. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. We'll keep that in.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad you're in control of that. So speaking of, kids are like sort of a natural product of relationships, and that's what I have. a byproduct even. So I was saying about Annie and Huey that so even though that Huey wronged her, she still knows that he believes in her. And I think she needs that belief in herself to be this superhero, and that's what brings her back to safety.
Well, particularly with what she finds out over the course of the episode about everybody else in her life, not just the Voight Corporation, which she's already kind of known as lying to her, and certainly the Seven are not particularly great. But she goes back home, she confronts her mom, and finds out, yes, her mom did inject her with Comptown V.
Yeah.
And that is why her dad left. So if anything, Huey is the most steady thing in her life at this point.
Yeah, that was sad, where it was like she was just kind of looking at that pipe, you know? And just wondering, you know, about, like, if he was the one who was actually fighting for her and she didn't realize that she had chosen the wrong parent. It was crazy to see her kind of, like, work that all out.
I also like the moment where she goes to church, which throughout her life has been a place that she's, like, able to find solace and, like, figure it out. And it just doesn't seem to work for her in this episode anymore in the same way. And the season has been about her faith being challenged, I feel like, which leaves her with this revelation that she just has to go with what is working now.
Yeah. Let's talk about the place where she ends up at the end of the episode, where she does save Huey. She doesn't seem particularly 100% back on board with him, but there's this killer fight between her and A-Train. With him having a heart attack, where does that leave her going forward?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a great spot, but I like the fact that both she has to prove that she has to show that she's a superhero and save his life, or try to save his life no matter what the consequences are. And even Huey, like the change that he's gone through from wanting to kill A-Train, you know, a few episodes ago at the beginning of the season, to now he's there trying to save his life as well. Like, That's just the hero bona fides we've been waiting for. And a great counterpoint to Butcher, who once again murdered a baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big difference between... We've talked about this quite a bit, but I think that's one of the big differences between the comics and the TV show is the comics definitely lean into the nihilism of Butcher. You know, that's what the world is like, and they can only, the boys can only push back against it ever so much. Versus the TV show, the way Eric Kripke and company are exploring it is I do think they're looking into... How do you still stay a hero in this world? You know, how do you still do what's right? And what you were saying, Justin, Huey turns a corner in terms of that over the course of the season. Annie definitely always wanted to be a superhero, found out the world was much more dark than she expected it was, but by the end is able to push back and become a hero once again, even if she's saying A-Train, who is not a great guy.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's what this show that goes, you know, it's everyone talks about it, it's like the super edgy show, really pushing the envelope. But they still make sure that they have these bright, innocent hero moments that I think keep it in that comic book world and keep it just true to the genre in a good way.
Well, let's talk about what else should we talk about? We should probably talk about the soup terrorists that are popping up. There's a brutal scene at the beginning. Homelander kills a bunch of drug dealers and other people. Yeah, pretty horrifying.
That was crazy. The classic, like, all right, like, you know, elite team going up to a building and then Homelander showing up being super cash, like, hey, boys, how's it going? And then I like how he, like, goes to leave, but then remembers and turns around and is like, oh, and you are the real heroes. I'm going to go, like, murder the shit out of a ton of people to some weird music and, like, really enjoy myself.
Yeah, and they do such a good job of making him just cocky, brutal, and just spotless. Like, no bit of blood even lands on his uniform. And I think, you know, they're satirizing... like America here, I think, in a great way, that Homelander personifies, I feel like, in this beginning section.
Also, I liked how it wasn't like they didn't even look like he planted it. He like reaches back in his cape and is like, oh, yeah, here's a thing that I found that's been on me the whole time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Another great moment, we kind of shat on A-Train a little bit, but there's a great moment where he's on crutches, goes into a store, and a security guard is checking him out, and everybody films him. And that's another thing that's been weaved through his storyline. He's a star. He's as big as anybody else on the Seven, but he's also black. And that's something that keeps rearing its head over and over as he needs to deal with his upbringing, deal with himself versus where he is in life. And... It's fascinating. I've talked about this a lot, but I like the fact that we feel sympathy for these otherwise irredeemable characters like you do in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also like even, you know, he's on crutches. Like he is so not a threat, and yet the security guard's like, you know, racism is so real, I'm going to slap you in the face with it, you know, and it's just... It's a lot to take, and to kind of see him kind of like, you know, kind of lose it on that security guard was great. You know, it's nice to kind of like, even though he's a horrible person, he's still right in that moment. You
know? Yeah, and the way that they, because for A-Train, it's that loss of fame that you were talking about, Alex. And like, what they do great on this show is they keep the baseline of America is a racist country. There's racism in America that is a problem for people. So this scene is about the loss of fame for A-Train, where now he is vulnerable to the actual experiences that a black person in America has to go through. And he feels that even sharper in this moment, I think.
Yeah. That's also followed up pretty closely. There's a couple of other things that happen in between with the scene with the Deep, where he shaves his chest and his head to Everybody Hurts. Then we see him and he's completely naked. And again, bringing everything full circle in a relatively subtle way. I like the fact that we see him completely bare and exposed versus the last time we saw his naked butt, he was assaulting Annie in the first episode.
Yeah.
So you see him from this place of seeming power to complete lack of power by the end with very similar shots, which I thought was nice structure throughout.
Yeah, and the way they – I mean, we've said this throughout the whole podcast, but the way they establish him as like a total creep asshole, victimizer, and then we follow his arc, and you start to sort of feel sorry for him in a way where it's just done in such a smart way. They keep the complexity there, and I think, like you're saying, Alex, they really nailed it with this end.
Yeah, and also you felt bad for his handler, had to be like, yeah, you're not getting the call up, man. You've been benched in a way you can't come back from.
Yeah. Let's talk about the party at Voight. There's a fun moment there at the beginning where Black Noir is sitting down at a piano. Oh. He's an amazing piano player. Oh,
the part where he just like the piano player stops and looks up and Black Noir just like sits down and like Black Noir is so great on this show. It's so great.
Yeah, they really give him the chance to pop now and again. Yeah. A character that doesn't really say much.
But we do get a new character here. Everybody's favorite Giancarlo Esposito is introduced to the show. If you need a villain on a TV show, better call Giancarlo Esposito.
Ooh, nice.
Thank you. So he seems to be the big boss here, right? He's running things for Stillwell. There's been hints throughout the season that there's stuff going on the 82nd floor, and he seems to be the man in charge. So that's a great setup for the next season as well. And as far as I've read, and I'm sure, Justin, you don't want to spoil or talk about this, he seems like he's going to be more integrated into the second season as an overarching villain, guy for Voight, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, he's definitely around in this upcoming season, and he's great. Like you said, the energy he brings to a bad guy, whether in any capacity, like a drug kingpin or a corporate boss, like,
or even someone who works like behind the counter at a fast food place or something, you know,
very the ultimate villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to see him pull out that Darksaber, man. What a good tease.
Yeah. He's playing the same character in every show he's in.
Yeah, that's the connection. It's the Giancarlo Esposito cinematic universe.
Yeah.
But very excited to see him. Anything else we want to talk about before we start to wrap up season one here? Any other moments that jumped out to y'all?
Well, I just think that they did a great job of like packaging a great season. Like the first episode was amazeballs. The last episode, I very much liked the ones in between, but like really setting this up like a great comic book series that like grabs a reader and then doesn't let you go at the end there. I think it's a really well thought out thing. So I'm hoping that the second season feels that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think we should talk probably about Frenchie Kimiko a little bit, or I guess the rest of the boys. We haven't really mentioned them. I know we've talked a lot about Frenchie and Kimiko, like, is their relationship romantic, or is it just something else? Pete, what do you think?
I think it's right now. It's you know, Frenchie likes her. We don't know if that's returned yet. So you know, but there is the possibility, and Frenchie does. I do think Frenchie would like that.
Frenchie would like that. That'll be the title of the first episode of season two. Yeah, I think there's definitely something there. Like we've talked about before, it seems like they're pushing that shipping aspect a little bit more here on the TV show than they do necessarily in the comic book. And I think that's great because they have a lot of chemistry there. There's definitely something deeper going on, and whatever direction it goes in, I'm just happy to see them together. Mother's Milk continues to be great. I love the motivation of his family throughout. That just gives him a really nice grounding and makes him very different from the rest of the boys who have none of that. So like Pete said, great first season, really so much more impressive and engrossing and emotionally grounded than I thought it was going to be going into it, both the first time and the second time through.
Great actors. You know, they made some amazing casting choices.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's a great package top to bottom and so smartly written and well shot. A scene in this episode where Stillwell and Homelander are hooking up, and then you land on the action figure in the background, in the foreground. Like, so cool.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally got to that, because you like to talk about how much you love packages. So I'm glad that this worked its way in on this last episode.
That's right. Aspiring UPS man.
Good stuff. All right, folks, thanks so much for listening to our first season of the podcast. We're going to be transitioning very nicely, given this timing, into the second season as we talk about that as episodes come out, presumably. So keep your subscribing fingers subscribed. If you want to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. Ask us questions about the boys. We would love to chat about it. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. Hear it, number four, the boys, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to follow us socially. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And don't forget to let us hear.
Let us hear for the boy.
That was perfect.